Christian Sundberg has a really unique story. He remembers his life pre-birth, his in-between lives, and how he chose to come here and choose the family he was part of and the person and life he was going to live. When Christian was a young child, he remembered his existence before coming to Earth. While he forgot that for most of his adult life, it spontaneously returned 13 years ago when he took up a meditation practice. He also began to have OBEs, out-of-body experiences. Professionally, he has a really normal job. He's worked for 16 years as a project manager for complex nuclear pump and valve manufacturing projects, and also for an insurance company. Christian is author of the book, A Walk in the Physical, which attempts to describe the larger spiritual context in which we exist and the importance of love in our human journey. I met Christian at the IONS Conference, International Association for Near-Death Studies. This is a really unique episode with a really unique story. Hey, everyone. I'm really excited to let you know about the Science and Spirituality Salons I'm now hosting. During these intimate events, a scientifically verified psychic medium will give all of you readings, and I will give a talk on the science and evidence that changed my mind about an afterlife. This will also be an amazing opportunity to get to meet some of you in person or virtually, and to share more about all the science and data that transformed my worldview and got me through my worst days. These can be hosted in your home, in a nearby cafe with a private room, or they can even be virtual. I've hosted a few already, and they were really special, fascinating, emotional, evidential. So if you're interested in getting a small group together over dinner, brunch, drinks, coffee, to learn more about the science and to get evidential medium readings, send me an email at hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put science and spirituality in the title. So a lot of you have reached out saying you wish there were full videos of all episodes, and I have been posting videos, but with a still frame, not with people. And I did some research and learned how to do some better quality video editing. So going forward, for most of the episodes, you will now be able to watch them in full video on YouTube, so you can see what the guest looks like. And I definitely would love your feedback on any of the video episodes. You'll be able to watch this full talk on YouTube. And I'm also going to go back through and edit and post older episodes in full video on YouTube. I often didn't record video for the earliest episodes, so I won't be able to edit all of the past episodes into video, but I'll do the ones I can. It's going to take some time, so they'll be rolled out slowly, but I am getting to them. And any of you who see them, I would love your opinions and any feedback. And thank you so much for taking the time to give feedback and your opinions. I really love hearing from all of you. Welcome to What the Fuck Just Happened. I'm your host, Liz Enten. If you listened to the intro, you know my story. If not, here's a brief summary. I'm a science-y skeptic, and when my dad died, I took a shot in the dark and decided to investigate if there was any possible evidence of an afterlife. I assumed that was as realistic as Santa Claus, but I was desperate. However, I was so blown away by what I discovered that I wrote a book and launched this podcast. In this podcast, I'll be talking to some fairly normal people about some really weird shit. I speak with everyone from psychic mediums and afterlife researchers to ordinary people who've had some inexplicable experiences. So come, listen. There's no need to draw any final conclusions. Keep an open mind and wonder, what the fuck just happened? Hi, I am speaking now with Christian Sundberg. He is an author, and we met at the IONS conference, and he has a really unique story, and I have honestly never heard it before from anyone else, so I am so happy to have him on. So Christian, introduce yourself. Tell us the name of your book and why. Touch about what happened.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. It was wonderful to meet you in DC. My whole family enjoyed it very much. So, in the human context, my name is Christian Sundberg. My body is 43 years old right now. I've worked professionally in the nuclear field for 16 years and now in insurance as a project manager. But I've had some really impactful personal spiritual experiences, non-physical experiences, including pre-birth memory returning to me. I remember choosing this incarnation and why. So I didn't share that for about 8 years. That memory returned around the age of 30. And, so I didn't share it because it's just the kind of thing you don't talk about, you know. But I did end up publishing a book, not primarily about the experience, but more about what is the human experience? What are we doing here on Earth? The book is called A Walk in the Physical, because we are just here having a walk, having a journey and experience. And the book was spirit-led. I felt chunks of it come to me intuitively over a period of about 6 years. And I never once sat down and said, okay, I'm going to write a book now. That was never how it worked. It was just like intuitive guidance and guidance and guidance. And I was like, I just got to get this down. And even the way it's organized was very spirit-led. And so it's available for free on my website. It's not about money. I just want to share the message of what we really are, you know, who we are here on Earth. I'm very, very passionate about that because our true nature is one of joy and freedom and love, and there's nothing to fear. And we just really need to remind each other of that while we're here so deep in the play.
That is true. I think we do have a lot of fear here, especially around death. But, you know, the more evidence we can get that it's not the end, especially for left-brainers like me, that's so helpful. What led to this memory coming up in the first place of your before this life and between lives? Because I know we'll go into this further, but just to clarify, this is not your first human life, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So that's a great question. So up until the age of 30, when I was a very small child, I had some of this pre-birth memory, but it quickly left me by the age of like 5 or 6. So between the ages of 5 or 6 and 30, I had, you know, no memory of this at all. And I saw the world through a very Lutheran Christian lens. But I was always a seeker, you know, and I came across the work of the physicist Tom Campbell. He's a consciousness explorer, and he's had many out-of-body experiences.
He's the one who's the author of My Big Toe.
Yes, My Big Toe, My Big Theory of Everything. That's right.
Yes, yes. Yes. Okay, I love him as well. Okay, sorry, just want to make sure it's the same Tom Campbell.
Yeah. So he encourages you to take up a meditation practice and to just very objectively go see. Just go see what you are beneath thoughts, beneath thinking. So at first I just began and continued the meditation because it felt good. It felt relieving to have some relief from thinking. But after a few months, I had my first non-physical experience, and it was so eye-opening and shocking that I was like, oh my gosh, I need to keep going down this path. So I continued to meditate, and at some point, I'm not sure exactly when, but within the first year, probably a few months after that, the pre-birth memory was just there. It was the most normal thing in the world. It was like somebody had just blown leaves off of the ground, and there was the grass. And it was like even more normal than the human experience that I was having. Like it was just much even more personal and close to me than the human experience. It sounds like this, you know, great revelation, and sure, the content is very rich and deep and personal, but not strange, you know, very natural.
Well, so you said before this memory came up of your pre-birth experiences, you had a non-physical experience that you thought was shocking.
Yes.
What was that? What happened?
Yeah. So in brief, I was having a dream, a normal dream, and then in this dream, this wave was going to come over and crush me. And I told myself, okay, you're going to die now. Let go of the body. But then I woke up, even though my body didn't wake up, I woke up in this state of incredibly strong vibrations and sounds. And it sounded like someone had parked a jet engine on either side of my head. And it was so freaking loud. It was like louder than anything I'd ever heard on Earth. And it was, and the vibrations were so strong, it felt like I was being just shaken, like I was strapped to an engine, you know? It was just so strong. And I was stuck there for maybe 15 or 20 long seconds, you know, terrified. And then when it finally ended, I jumped out of bed and I was sweating and I was like freaked out. I'm like, what the heck was that? Like, it was not subtle. It was scary. It was intense. But, you know, but it was just like the first taste. It was like I had begun to touch other layers of being, other realities, data streams, as Tom Campbell would put it. And that can be experienced like strong static at first. But anyway, at the time, I didn't understand. I just knew like, oh my gosh, like that was real. Like that was so real. I have to keep going and investigating. So I just kept going down the path. And so since then, I've had a number of out of body experiences, very, very real, even more real than this Earth. very normal too.
It's so interesting you talk about the vibrations and the sounds, because there's so much consistency in that. First of all, the vibrations, I've had people who've had NDEs on talk about that, and a lot of meditators. And I had experience, if you read my book, you know, I had this weird experience just early starting this where I felt all these waves. And then that sound you talked about, that's similar to what a lot of people hear when they have out of body experiences right before they go out of body. Is that, am I right in that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's very common, actually. I didn't know it at the time. It just scared the crap out of me at the time.
Oh, so it scared you. You didn't love it.
No, I didn't love it at that first moment, but it didn't matter. My curiosity was greater than any fear it might have provoked, because it was so real, you know. So I didn't keep meditating in order to have more experiences. That's not really how it worked for me. I just realized that by deeply coming to know what I really am, my consciousness itself, there were larger parts of me that just naturally would arrive. That's just the easiest way I can put it.
You kept saying all this was actually really normal. What do you mean by that? Because if people hearing this for the first time might not say it's normal.
I know, it doesn't sound normal. I'm a normal guy, I promise. No, I know it sounds really strange. What I mean is that, oh, this is difficult to speak to. And I want to just disclaim before we get into these topics that language is just incredibly insufficient. There's just no way to use earthly language to speak to our higher natures or the higher realms from which we come, because our language is based in our local world. You know, it's based in form and symbol and all the assumptions of Earth that we just take for granted, you know, like linear time, a discrete location. You know, we really believe in those things. Our language is based on them and in them, but our higher nature precedes all of that context. So it's like almost impossible to speak about these things, you know, using language. So that being said, I can at least say that it's more difficult than it might seem, you know, on the human level. Underneath all the levels of what we're not, underneath all the human story, our consciousness itself is already something. You could say that the you that feels like you to you is the most natural thing for you. And then that you has become wrapped up within the story of form, the story of the human condition, the human life. That's not really what you are. It's actually just kind of like a big virtual reality that you're deeply, deeply engaged in. So that's what I mean, like it's more normal, because when you actually let go of all that you're not, let go of the thinking, let go of the judgments and the conditioning and the story, and you just dwell fully in the aliveness that you are, then what arises within that is very natural, very normal. And it can actually be seen that the experience of being separate, apparently separate, which is what the human experience is like, you know, we experience separation rather deeply here, extremely deeply here. That's like the name of the game, is to feel separate from each other. That is actually the alien state of being by comparison.
What happened when you remembered this between lives, or actually you remembered before your very first life on Earth.
Yes.
Am I correct? And then you also remember between lives. So what did you remember? I guess we'll start linearly, even if though apparently linear time isn't real, but we'll start with your first, your memory pre-birth as your first life as a human.
Reincarnation?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've shared this a number of times, so I won't go into like the full detail. It's a story that I've, you know, I shared on a number of podcasts, but I'll just say that before I'd ever incarnated, I came across a being who had incarnated. Okay. So this is like really difficult to speak to because then people want to know, okay, where were you? What was the environment? What did everything look like? You know, what was, okay. So I'm happy to try to speak to some of that, but I'll just at least summarize very simply and say that I was in a different reality system at the time that looked like an environment of living light. And I was and am that light too. And so is everybody else, and I'm connecting with them. And when you engage with another being in that context, it's like a telepathic exchange. It's not words, because separation is not a thing. I could feel from this being the intense quality of his nature. He was full of so much power and joy and peace and freedom. And like his evolvingness was just like off the charts. I don't know how to describe this. And I was just very, very deeply inspired by like who he was, what he was. And I asked him like, how did you do this? Like, how are you this? and I asked like, do you feel as much freedom and power as I feel that you feel? And he shared yes. And he allowed me to feel like through and into him. And I asked, how did you do that? Like, and one of the things he showed me was that he had lived a physical life where he had suffered a long-term health condition. He had suffered a pain, an ailment. And the way that he chose to meet that experience, process that experience, like the way that his spirit met it and utilized it, allowed this incredible refinement of his being. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do that. Like, I want to do that. I'm going to do that. You know, and at first he communicated something like, yeah, that's what they all say. Like, not in a negative way, but kind of like, you just don't understand how hard this can be. And I was like, no, I mean it. I want to do it. So that was before I was ever, you know, had ever had a physical incarnation. And since then, I've had many experiences, and I ended up finding this being later and sharing with him that I was on the path.
When you ran into this being again, did you ever run into him on Earth as another human?
I have no idea. I'm still like super veiled. I'm still a veiled being right now while I'm in the human condition. So, I mean, it's possible, but keep in mind, I don't want to get too far out in the woo weeds here, but keep in mind that Earth is not the only incarnation opportunity. So, you know, I know that he was physical, but it's a very big universe, and there's more than one universe even. It's a very huge multidimensional context. So I have no idea if I've ever encountered the being here on Earth. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. There's plenty of other planets. I mean, even NASA, traditional science are finding other Goldilocks planets. And we already know
millions.
This. Yeah. This galaxy, let alone whole universe, is filled with them. And you said multiverse. You think there's other universes.
Yes.
What do you mean by veiled?
Yeah. So, okay. So what I mean by veiled, this is a really important concept. So your consciousness precedes the human experience. So that consciousness, its native state is to be connected to all things and to know that connection and feel that connection all the time. So if you imagine an ocean of water, you're like a drop in the ocean. So your native state is to be one with the ocean, and you're still you, you're still a drop, you're individuated, but you're also one with the ocean, and that oneness is known and felt. And what I mean is you in this state, you have access to all knowing, all data. You're capable of so much more than what we perceive here on Earth. So in order to have the very, very specific and limited and dense experience of being human, you have to accept what we call very simply the veil, which just means a set of constraints in consciousness space that go along with having the incarnative experience.
You remember the experience of how that veil was put on you.
Yeah. So accepting the veil was like surrendering to a plummeted vibration. This is really hard to describe. Okay. But imagine your body, but not your physical body, your body of awareness, the body that feels like your physical body, but it's really your consciousness. connected to everything and existing in an extremely high vibration state. And then having a cloak, a veil put upon you that you surrender to, surrender into and accept. And then through doing that, there's this plummet in vibration down, 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 lower, 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 more, lower, more, lower, more. Keep going, lower, 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 all the way down into this extremely dense state of being. And in that process, all knowing is erased, cut off, like not actually erased. It's like you feel like it's erased. You know, all of your connectedness, all of your remembrance, all that active knowing is veiled, is cut off. And that is precisely, you know, the value of the physical experiences that we come in to have, that experience of being just the human from the limited point of view with no memory, no memory of anything else.
So when does this veil go on? Is this when you're a baby or?
So, yeah, so we're never actually a baby. I know some. Okay. So the physical, think of the physical like a simulation that's running on its own. And then we interject into it and assume the role of a given perspective, a given body. So in my case, I accepted the veil before this body was born, while it was still in the womb of my mom, my mother. And so surrendering to the veil occurred, and then there was this plummet, and then I was in the womb, and then I almost rejected the experience, actually, because I was like, I am not doing this. This vibration is so low, I'm not doing this. But I ended up sticking with it because the spirit came to me and encouraged me, showed me again who I really am. So that occurred, I don't know when, you know, in the pregnancy, but I can at least say that after that happened, it felt like I was in the womb for a long time before a physical birth actually happened. And then I do remember, I have some short, brief, shocking memories of the day I was born physically in this life.
Right. And I know some of those memories were verified. But first, which you'll have to explain, but first, I do want to ask you, you said the veil blocks all memories, but it didn't for you. And it doesn't in some of the cases that, say, Dr. Jim Tucker has researched on cases of kids with past life memories and some in between lives memories. So why does it not take fully for everyone?
Okay. So I'm not special, first of all. So I remember, though, in my pre-birth experience asking, can I have like a tiny bit of memory this time? Like, I don't want to forget everything. I want to just have a little tiny, tiny bit of memory. And they said, the guides said I could do that. But I knew that that would make this life more challenging, more difficult, because that means the contrast is even greater. Because if there's any recollection of home, there's like this homesickness that gets introduced that's extreme, very extreme. Okay. So the veil is very effective. It's super effective. It works. But on the other hand, the short answer to your question is the soul, each one of our souls is so huge and vast and complex and powerful. I mean, basically, to put it very in crude terms, you are a piece of God. Okay, so what can truly veil God? Well, only God's surrendering God's self can veil God. That's why we have to surrender ourselves into the veil. There's no way for you to be veiled any other way. Even though we surrender ourselves, we are still on the other side right now, you see. So it's not that there's like, you know, an unfairness or something. It's more like each soul is so unique, and each veil is unique and organic and specific to that soul. Each life is unique. Each body is unique. Each context is unique. The history of every soul is unique. So with all that uniqueness and all that richness, it's natural that there's going to be some breaks in the simulation. The veracity is maintained as best as possible, but you're going to have, especially as we awaken, which means especially as we increase the vibration of our consciousness towards what we really are, that it would become more and more, because the vibrational distance is decreasing slowly, and as that distance decreases, it becomes more readily available to have some snippets of memory or awareness of who we really are.
And I don't think they've done this, but I'm so curious, and I wish they would, that you've never had your brain scanned, and people who have more pre-birth memories, there isn't some difference in your brains that have been discovered, is there?
I have no idea.
You haven't participated in that.
No, I haven't, no.
You used the word God, and yeah. I'm curious what you mean by that, because yeah. the only God I understood was like the biblical, which is why I just never believed in
sure.
anything like a God. So when you say God, I'm assuming you don't mean this single sort of domineering consciousness that tells...
No. Yeah, so it's just a word, and I know that it's a loaded word. I personally don't mind that term, but I recognize it has a lot of baggage, too. So the word, oh my gosh, it points to something that is so far beyond language, I can't even possibly begin to speak to it. You could say, metaphorically, God is the source of all that is, the one ocean with a capital O, the great I am presence of all things, the one true knower, you know, of which you are a part. So that's not a dude in the sky. It's beingness itself, but also the most personal, loving wholeness of being. It's for each of us, it's like our dearest friend and our most poignant love and our parent. And it's like the truest relation. It's a relationship that's the closest to all of us, actually.
That's really interesting and probably something we can't fully understand as humans.
Correct. Yeah.
You said you had memory of your birth, and I know that you also mentioned that was verified in your book. You mentioned that. I'm also just going to say, because you said you've gone into a lot more details other places. Christian's book, he goes into a lot more of these details. So get his book. It's really good. It's also audiobooks. You can listen. You can read it.
Thank you.
Of course. But yeah, so tell us about your memory of your birth and how that was verified.
Well, yeah, the only verification I think that you're mentioning is that later in my life, I drew the birth room for my mother, and she verified that was where the objects in the room were located. Like, I remember where the bed was, where the heating grate was, the window, where the doctor was standing. It's just one image memory, and in this image, I was like up away from the bed. So I know they say babies can't see, so I don't really understand how I've seen this, but I remember seeing it. I remember the color of the paint on the heating grate, you know? So, I mean, so that's, you know, is that formal verification? No, you know, it's subjective. It's close to home. I don't feel a need to, you know, prove it, but I've had other forms of verification though with experiential verification. Sometimes if I have a non-physical experience with someone, I will really do my best when I'm interacting with them non-physically to try to confirm it and prove it that we've interacted, that once, you know, we're here, once we're doing the physical awake thing. And I've had probably half a dozen successes. I've had at least as many failures where the individual doesn't remember the interaction, but I've had some confirmations that were, you know, definitely good enough for me at least. And at least one while I was awake, I was interacting with a woman who I know that I know non-physically. I've never met her personally. And I had an interaction with her that I was able to confirm, at least to my own satisfaction.
And what would you say is the most mind-blowing, veridical, verified experience you've had?
Sure. Well, I can at least share the example that I was just mentioning, and I will in a moment. But let me just point out that, okay, so I am all for veridical verification. I'm all for skepticism. We need to remain both open-minded, but also skeptical and investigate with as much objectivity as possible. The truth stands up to all scrutiny. So that's good. But I also want to point out, however, that the truest veridical evidence is your own personal experience of it. The truest evidence won't be an external, like someone showed me a new object or told me a new story. It will be a knowing, an experience yourself. Like when I've been out of body and seen the color of the sky in a certain environment that is more colorful than any, I mean, like 1,000 times more real and colorful than anything on Earth, with that much lucidity and feeling my connectedness to it, it's so self-evidently real, it's off the charts. Like it doesn't need, you know, you don't need to come back to this comparatively black and white movie on Earth and say, oh, was that real? No. you know it. Like, you really know it. And that personal knowing, that personal experience, yeah, that's the real quote-unquote evidence. So which is one quick comment to that. So I really lift up meditation as a practice, not so that in order you can have these amazing experiences. No, that's not the goal. No, rather, I encourage that you go just very objectively investigate what your own consciousness is beneath thought. So don't make anything up. No new stories, no new ideas. I know your thinking mind is going to go into overdrive and want to give you some new ideas. And what are the new ideas I can think about? No. To put all that aside and actually go experientially with full alertness, go investigate every day for 30 or 40 minutes, set it every day for months. Don't judge it even for 3 or 4 months. Investigate experientially, what is my awareness? What is my consciousness beneath thought? And I recommend an exercise in part 4 of my book to get started with that process if anyone is interested. Okay, so that was a long tangent, but I think that's important because as soon as we talk about veridical, we tend to think in the, you know, in our local thinking minds context, show me the evidence. Well, I'll at least share this brief story. So this woman that I had interacted with online, I just sensed intuitively that her and I were like soul family. Like I just knew her really well. So I went for a walk at work one day out up a road and I had this interaction with her higher self. I know this sounds crazy. This is getting into the woo field, but this is what happened. I had this interaction with her and I felt her send this like energy down my back and it was very healing. And I remember her communicating, this is a gift. And I said, thank you very much. It's really interesting. Wow. And then I remember her nudging, you see that piece of moss on the ground in front of you, pick that up, take it back to your desk and go tell my human, me that's playing the human, that you found this piece of moss in the context of you receiving this energetic gift from me. I'm like, okay, this is crazy. Okay, I'll be the crazy guy. So I took the moss back to my desk at work, messaged this woman on Facebook, and I said, I explained what happened. And she said, I kid you not, last night I said to my husband, the perfect example of a gift that someone could give me would be a piece of moss. So that kind of thing to me is that's veridical to me. They didn't see that. It's not on paper. It's not like, you know, 1,000 scientists can go study that or something. There are many studies out there of similar research. But for me, that's the kind of thing that now it no longer is strange. You know, when I have a veridical confirmed interaction, that's not strange at all to me. You know, I've become very familiar with feeling, because I'm a very left brain person too. You know, I'm a project manager of 20 years. I worked in the nuclear industry for 16 years. And I that's just how my mind has historically worked. However, the deeper parts of ourselves, the intuitive portions, they actually know a lot more. When you're willing to be humble enough to put aside the intellect and actually go see what's actually down there. And through that, I have felt the living connection I've had with others in ways that have been confirmed. And it's really beautiful.
I'm going to just tell a slightly veridical-ish story. And for me, things get veridical when you hear more and more stories again and again, similar to what Christian shared, and you meet people like you, Christian, who are really normal people. And it just happens more and more. And I think the body of evidence comes together to give us so much, more than just hope. But it was funny. I was watching Christian's talk during the IONS conference and I was like, oh, I completely know him. Like without a doubt, just the way, you see someone you haven't seen in like 6 years that you worked with or 10 years ago from, I don't know how old anyone is, but 10 years ago or school or whatever. And you're like, I haven't seen a person forever. So I'm watching him talk. I was like, oh yeah, he did this talk for a Forever Family webinar and I help on the behind the scenes. So I was like, I know Christian. Then, so I said to him, we both, I went up and introduced myself and said that I have this podcast, What the Fuck, I would like him to come on. And he's like, oh yeah, I know you. And I said, yeah, you did the webinar for Forever Family. No, he didn't. So I was like, but I was like, I know him. I've seen this talk. I've met him at parties. And I saw him on the after party one night at the IONS. And I said, oh, you must know this friend of mine. Did we do a podcast together with him? No. He had to go. His whole family is there. He has fairly young children. I'm looking through. I think I found your LinkedIn or Facebook or something. But I was like, oh, you know what? I've got to figure this out. Because it was really bothering me. Like, no doubt I knew him. And he said, no doubt he knew me. I was like, did he used to work in the photography or videographer? Maybe we knew each other when I used to work in fashion during a fashion week event and, we're a photo shoot. No logical reason we've ever met each other. And Christian said he absolutely knew me. And I was like, okay, this is so weird. What if I knew him between lives? Let me play with the evidence of this. And I brought that up before we start recording. Christian was like, oh yeah, no, I already knew that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I sensed it before, you know, when you came up to, we were, so for the listeners, we went to the Ions party that one night in Washington, D.C., met all sorts of amazing people. And then, you know, you and I got to have a conversation and I just knew I was really in the zone, the meditative state. And I was like, oh yeah, I definitely know you. I mean, and you were like, yeah, from something. I'm like, no, no, before this, obviously. Like, I mean, to me, it's obvious that there is, you know, there's relationship there. See, but that's how like so many of us, like a lot of us have relationships and we just don't remember it. Or we come across each other and we just feel some connection. It's deeper than that. I don't know what the specifics are. I'm not quick to jump on them. You know, I'm like, I remain skeptical too. It's important to keep that skepticism. But I also know, you know, my intuitive, I know, you know, when I know somebody. And so, yeah, it's not strange to me.
So that was an interesting experience. So what is life like on the other side? Sometimes it sounds like it'd be really boring. Just, oh, you're just in the sea of love. Not that love's not great, but like, it sounds like being at a spa, which is great for 3 days, but being in a spa for 10 years, I'd be so miserable. So it sounds very boring. Is there purpose? Are there friendships?
That's
cool. What is it like?
Okay. So you're, I love this question. Okay. So the question is a little bit like, let's say you and I are playing Minecraft together or playing a video game together. And we play Minecraft for years. And then you say to me in Minecraft one day, well, what's it like outside of Minecraft? It sounds so boring. There is so much to do on Earth outside of Minecraft. How could you possibly describe that to someone in Minecraft? Similarly, the limitations that we experience while we're human are off the charts. They're so high. So when you take away those limitations, the native nature of spirit, of consciousness, is so creative and so powerful and so free that the possibilities for experience are unfathomably vast, way more than we can even imagine within the human mind. So the other side is not just one place. It's not like one loading screen and that's it. And then this is the real place. No, this is actually like the not real place. And there are many, many, many different reality systems that all have their own rules and their own purposes. And I only have awareness of some, and there's some that I've felt guided not to share too much about, which is fine. I just can say at least that there is a multidimensional scope that is beyond imagining, and it's not boring. It may be true that I will say at least though that when we exist in that very free state, there is a certain something that the limitation set of being physical provides that we don't get anywhere else. Like a certain challenge that seems to be missing. So you might say, like as a metaphor, let's say you work out every day and you go to the gym and you're in great shape, and then you stop working out for a couple weeks, you just might crave going back to the gym. Now, in this case, it's not like the gym has something to offer that we is not already natively a part of us, that, you know, we already are everything we need. We don't need anything. We don't need to do anything. Beingness is already whole. Yet, evolution occurs. Evolution is happening. Evolution meaning the expansion of love and joy. And so we may choose to re-engage this physical experience, or we may choose a great many other experiences. I can also say very generally speaking that most other reality systems are thought responsive. So that is, our intention and our thoughts immediately have an effect. That actually happens here on Earth too, but it's a lot slower. It's like ridiculously slow.
So there are a lot of different options and universes, dimensions with different laws. The way here we have laws, I can't jump 1,000 feet in the air.
Exactly.
It takes X amount of hours to get from point A to point B.
You have to move through every intermittent space in this reality. Yeah, you can't go directly somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Right. And if I want a certain object, somebody has to physically make it. You can't just think it and it will appear.
Exactly. Yeah.
Those are the laws.
That's right. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, just like video games might have different rules, you know. You can play one video game and you might play another one and that has completely different rules. Different story, different context, different character. Maybe there's no character. You know, maybe it's Pong. Whatever. There are reality systems of experience that are very different, but they all have their own rules of some kind. And ours just happened to be at the very far end of the high limitation spectrum. So you can think of our reality at the far end. Okay, so we transcend all duality, so I'm not trying to make it sound like duality is fundamentally true or real. It's not.
What is duality?
Duality meaning the experience of this and not that, up and not down, hot and not cold, dark and not light. This shape and not that shape. This is an apple and not a pear.
Meaning that we think here and then the other side.
Yeah, exactly.
This experience and then the other. And those are the only two in all of consciousness. But that's there's limitless types and states of dimensions.
I don't know if it's limitless, but it's extremely huge at least. But yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Yes. It is. Yes. So we perceive reality from within the lens of duality that we learned. You know, so like we learn discrete location. That's a really big one to us. You're over there, I'm over here, and that's just, and then if I want to go somewhere else, I got to move my body between every intermittent space to get there. That is specific to our reality. Like it's so obvious to us and it's so like assumed. So usually when we ask about the other side, we're like, okay, tell me about the places, tell me about the environments, tell me about the objects. What does it look like? I want to tell me the visual because I understand that. And there are those things in higher systems. In fact, they're even more real. The sensory experience is even more rich and real there. However, spirit is not primarily made of form. Any of these shapes or symbols or experiences, spirit transcends all form. And we just engage it and utilize it for the growth of being. It's like a huge play or a game that we utilize form. And this reality just happens to be super limiting and super dense. And it's kind of like going into outer space in an astronaut's space suit or going to Mount Everest, maybe, or something like that. It's extreme.
Are we the most dense, or are there denser, more difficult planets or realms?
Yeah. So from my experience, this reality, this universe, is the most dense, limiting type of universe. But also keep in mind that really what ends up becoming dense is the vibration of consciousness itself when it associates into something. Like the physical universe is not, okay, we veil into a very defined extreme set of limitations. That's the physical universe. But then when we're here, we apply the meaning. And so when the meaning that we apply is converse to our true nature, that ends up being an extreme negative, hellish type, low vibration experience. Hellish, low vibration type experiences can happen here. They can also happen in thought responsive reality systems if we're really deep into fear and actualizing fear. Fear is, you could just say fear is hell, whether it's here or in another environment, whereas our true nature is total love and peace and joy, and there's nothing to fear in it. So I went kind of around in a circle there, but yes, this is the most limiting type of experience that I'm aware of, and I was aware of that in my pre-birth experience, that this was like, wow, off the charts.
And are there other planets and solar systems and galaxies in this reality?
Yes. Yeah. And they each have their own vibration. You know, they each have their own context. You could say the human collective consciousness has its own color or its own sound or its own temperature, you could say. And so the human collective consciousness is one pond within a much larger ocean. It's a very exciting pond, super interesting, super tantalizing opportunity. Wow, get your hands dirty, you know, play in the mud kindergarten or junior high type experience. You know, that's Earth by comparison to some of the other systems, but very unique, very precious. In fact, being given the opportunity to play a human during the awakening at all, the awakening meaning this period of time we're going through right now, is such an honor. It's like so unique and such a precious opportunity.
And are there humans on other planets?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know. I would imagine not, but maybe other carbon-based DNA life forms. I know there are other intelligent civilizations. I remember knowing that I had lived at least once in a different intelligent civilization in the physical with a very different vibrational experience. I don't know about humans or, you know, I don't know. That sounds strange to my logical brain.
You ever wonder what mediums do with their free time? How about a 30-something-year-old gay medium living in New York City? Well, in this podcast, you're about to find out. Welcome to Ghost Daddy, a place where LGBTQ plus spiritual people and our cis-hetero allies, of course, have a place to just be themselves and spread their wisdom. This is the new face of spirituality. None of that love and light, toxic positivity crap. So pour yourself a vodka soda, open up your mind, and start listening. You can listen to the Ghost Daddy podcast anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
And what about way back in history? I'm talking way, way back, like pre-Big Bang and then post-Big Crunch. Are there other, let's even break it down. Let's start instead of before. Okay, yeah, let's go through different ones. First, let's just start with this solar system. Like, were there other material, human, or carbon-based complex consciousness in this dimension before this solar system developed?
I don't know when in the 15 billion years of this universe, I don't know when whatever given form of life appeared where. I have no access to that kind of information. I do know that life has developed throughout the universe at varying rates. So that is because the whole universe is like a simulation occurring within spirit, within consciousness, and consciousness is synonymous with the word life. So life is creating and utilizing this context. It's not like the context is first and then life happens second. Life happens first and life utilizes the context and then shines through it in the form of various physical life forms or even forms that we might not consider conscious. Like, for instance, I was aware in my pre-birth experience, as long as we're going in this direction, that the sun itself had a living consciousness. It was like aware. It's really hard to describe. So I don't know when, but in the context of the 15 billion years, but I can at least say that, oh yes, we definitely precede the entire linear time sequence of the physical. It'd be like you asking, after we played Minecraft for a few years, did we exist before Minecraft? Yes, that's for sure. Just because you turn on a Minecraft server doesn't really affect the larger world that much. That's kind of how it is here, where our consciousness does precede the physical universe and its timeline.
Even before the Big Bang, and you think it will continue after the Big Crunch?
Yeah, if there's a Big Crunch, for sure. The whole linear time sequence is a creation. It's an illusion. It's created within us. So certainly we precede the Big Bang. The Big Bang is just the beginning of the simulation. Someone hits the run button and then there it goes. And, now billions of years are unfolding and that's fine. Do we precede that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're not physical. We just lose ourselves in the physical experience at given points. And that's valuable. But the spirit certainly precedes the physical. In fact, there are these, it's hard to describe, these waves of creation where there's like an outbreathing of universe and then an in-breathing and then like waves within waves, you could say. And then there's this expansion of being that accompanies each wave. And we utilize that. We participate in that and we precede that whole process. I say we because I don't want to differentiate you and I, the little characters that we feel like we are, with the whole. Because as we are individuated as souls, but we are also one with the whole, like I said. So this is something that we and the whole are participating in together. It's very difficult to describe. And so we are the creator. I'm just pointing out that we are creators. We are part of the creative process, not just lost within this loop or something.
How do animals play into all of this? Do we have the same... Could we go be animals? Are animals doing the same thing along with us? And we're all kind of the same type of telepathically communicating souls on the other side? I mean, although I feel like I communicate really well with animals here.
Yeah, consciousness has animals or consciousness has humans. Like consciousness has human experiences or consciousness has animal experiences. The differences might be significant in the local sense. An animal has a very different cognitive potential than a human, for instance. But it doesn't matter. Consciousness precedes that limitation set and then uses it and shines through it. And in some ways, like take a dog, for instance, they might not be able to think the same way we do, but they're actually way more present in certain ways. They're always present, just kind of shining with that light of being. And we love that. You know, we thrive on that. And they actually serve us just by being with us, because they don't have that burden of the cognitive, you know, hell that sometimes we wear in the form of all these thoughts that we get associated with that dogs don't have. But yeah, both are consciousness. I have one memory of being a non-human animal. I know that sounds really wild, but I remember being a migrating bird, actually. And it was a very spiritual, but very physically rigorous experience. Very physically rigorous, but very spiritual feeling.
So it was physically rigorous because life in the wild for animals is tough.
Yeah, I don't really know why. I just remember it being really vigorous. And I remember, just as an example, I know this is getting out there, but I'm just for fun. I mean, this is what I remember. It wasn't intellectual. Like there was no ideas, you know, no like logical thoughts at all. But there was this knowing, you could even say like a feeling, that if I was separated from my flock, my pack, I would die. Like it was terrifying to be without the flock. That would be really, really bad. And then there was this compulsion to stay with that group. I know this sounds wild, because from my human point of view, it's really alien. Reflecting back on that and feeling it is very alien feeling. It doesn't feel like me, the human conditioning that I'm used to, that I'm wearing right now. It's very different. But still feels like me. You see, that's a thing. It's still me.
You said it's still you. Do you think we...
Yes. Yeah. You're you. You're not the human. So when the human... It's like the question is a little bit... And I mean this playfully. The question is a little bit like saying, are you still you when you take off your shirt? Yeah, of course. In fact, you're less constrained. Stepping out of a body is like that. You're actually more like you. You actually feel more like yourself, because now you're not all these limitations that you thought were you, like the age, you know, the health issues, the psychological conditioning that wasn't you. You know, you kind of drop all that. And the real you isn't that thought set. It isn't that thought pattern. That was just something you wore, something you saw through. The real you is free and wonderful and alive. And yes, that individuated you is always preserved. It's precious. It's precious and preserved. And that's true of all of our loved ones, even though they may have played other characters too. It's like if you have a high school play, you know, and you play these characters on a stage, and then later you go out for coffee. You don't have to be your character in the coffee shop anymore, because you know that you're not that character, but you can really like reflect, reminisce, enjoy your relationship. In fact, you expanded your relationship through the play that you just acted on stage together, you know?
And you mentioned, you know, as the bird, being terrified of being separated from your flock because you would die. And we're all really scared of death. It sounds, yeah. Why are we scared of it if we've done it multiple times and we are going somewhere where we're so much safer than here? Why do we have this like existential bleak,
yep,
terror?
it's the main fear. Yeah, because we've lost our identity, ourselves, our sense of selves, into an illusion. We've bought into the form, I am the body, I am the story, I am the linear time, I am the job, I am the thing. And then guess what? Then the body dies. So now what happens is, when we learn that the body dies, or we see a body die for someone that we love, what immediately happens so quick is we don't even catch it, is we buy into a perception, I can be destroyed. That's not true. But as soon as you buy into a perception that's not in alignment with the truth, fear arises mightily. And that great fear of death arises from the great misperception that I can be eradicated, I can be destroyed. God can't be destroyed. It's the thing that is. It exists forever. It's the main thing that is. So, but when the main thing that is really buys into a perception that it can stop existing, or that it can lose its freedom, or that it can be powerless, or that all the great negative perceptions we encounter on earth and entertain on earth, that provokes fear, because it's not in alignment with the truth. See, but that's precisely the opportunity of earth, is we really get to come in and actually have the experience of perceiving like, wow, I'm going to die. Now, what do you do with that? you know? And then when you step past it at the end, you look back, oh my gosh, there's never anything to fear. But you had the experience of being in that position and actually having that perspective. I'm reminded of a Seth quote. I don't remember it exactly. Seth was a guide channeled by Jane Roberts back in the 70s. And Seth said something like, every one of my physical lives, I thought I was going to die and be destroyed and it would be oblivion. Every one of them. And he said something like, if only one I could have known that truly I lived on, then even death could have been a great adventure. And I wish to share that message with people because I know it's not easy. I know this is super convincing and we don't remember anything else, but really there's nothing to fear. There is no death. Death is a big illusion.
I know you made the comparison of a school play, but there's still certain characteristics that you play as a character in a play that don't carry over. So if there are characteristics of ourselves or our loved ones that we just adore, like both my dad and my mentor who sadly passed also, just had the best sense of humor and so funny. And I love that about both of them. And I hope that is still aspects of them in the non-physical. Do some of our best qualities and personality traits still carry over?
Oh, yes. Okay. So the soul has qualities. This is really difficult to speak to because a soul also transcends all form. But anyway, the soul has qualities and we each have our own nature, you could say. And that nature is felt and known by each other. Like in the non-physical, when someone shows up, you don't go, oh, hey, so-and-so name. No, you don't need to because you feel their vibration. You feel exactly who they are. Like that's who they are, is their being, their feeling, their vibration, all the qualities that make them them. Those qualities then shine through the human character and through the human limitation. Here, we do wear non-native limitations. Like the biology might have limitations. Like maybe you have a neurochemical issue because your body doesn't process a certain nutrient correctly or something, you know. Now you are seeing the universe through a lens of a biology that doesn't work in a certain way, you know. So now you have to do what you can. You have to make choices from within that neurochemical context. You're not actually the neurochemistry. When the body dies and the neurochemistry is dropped, you actually feel more like yourself, but your native qualities can still shine through it. And what's really important also is, of course, our native qualities and who we are affect the body very much. They can help the body heal or they can guide the body. The body is kind of like a living record, a living soundboard, so that we can explore who we really are and the true qualities of who we are we absolutely do take with us.
I want to ask you a little bit about being Christian. What made you decide to be Christian?
Christian the human? Christian the human, not Christian the religion, right?
Christian the human.
Yeah.
Christian Sundberg, not Christian.
I'm not actually, I know this sounds crazy. I'm not actually Christian Sundberg. This is just there is no Christian Sundberg. I know you're seeing an image and hearing a voice. What I am is my awareness. I am the I. You are the knower of your experience. But anyway, so why did I choose to, you know, engage this context? In my case, I wanted to process a very old fear that had bested me in a previous experience because I knew that there was a profound opportunity for expansion, the expansion of being and the evolution of consciousness, my consciousness and all that is through this experience. And so the guides brought me this life as Christian as an opportunity that was a pretty good match for my intention. It actually wasn't as good of a match as a previous life that I had previously I had aborted this previous incarnation because I was so fearful in the womb. That previous life was actually a much better energetic match to my intention of facing this fear. This life was like pretty good. It was good enough. So that's like the main thing. And so then when they brought it to me, I reviewed what it would be like to be Christian. You know, like millions and millions of possibilities before I was even incarnated, I reviewed like what it would be like to feel like to be me, to be here this long, you know, this like length of time that would feel so long and to feel the body and to feel what it would be like to actually be in certain circumstances that were more or less likely depending on all the free will choice making that would unfold from me and from everybody else.
Now, the person you were supposed to be, was that with different parents?
Well, I wouldn't say supposed to be. That was just a previous opportunity that did not pan out. That was different parents. I don't know anything about that life. I just know it was more appropriate than this one would have been. This one But this is still good. It's good enough. The job.
I'm glad I got to meet you. You seem like a cool person. Oh, I'm glad Christian Sundberg exists as you. Oh. Okay, interesting. What do you know what number life?
No. I know that I've lived hundreds of times, but I have no idea about a number. I once meditated and afterwards I saw all these spheres that were my lives, and there were hundreds of them. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am all these people. Like maybe that's a bad way to put it. I have experienced all these things. That's a better way to put it. So I know that it's in the hundreds, but I have no idea.
When we cross over, you said there's kind of different dimensions. Just like here, we could live in a village in Thailand, a big city in China. We could live in a small town in America. I mean, there are just so many completely different physical experiences we could have. Most likely we can live on other Goldilocks planets. Are there all different communities and styles you could live on?
Yes. So I can't speak in great depth about it because I'm still quite veiled, but there are for sure other communities that we can engage. I'm reminded of the book Autobiography of a Yogi that my wife and I are reading right now. And in this book, the author, Yogananda, his master comes back to him after death and shares his experience in what he calls the astral worlds, and then this higher set of realities he calls the causal plane. And then he gives quite a bit of specific context to what those universes are like, those realms are like. I won't attempt to be that specific, but I can at least say that, yes, we tend to go, to put it very generally, we go where we resonate. We go where we vibrate. So you could say the quality of your being and also your karma, which just means the cause and effect of all the choices you've made and whether you've been loving or fearful, tend to help guide you into future experiences that will be beneficial for you and for others in the long run.
And now, what about bad people? Because it sounds like, no offense, I don't think this about you as Christian Sundberg. I'm only repeating what you said. You were a person who was very, very unkind in previous lives, once you said.
I had one previous life when I was... So the thing is that, okay, we tend to think, oh, good people and bad people. There's duality talking again. So the thing is, though, the nature of spirit itself is love. Your true nature is love. No matter how many layers of crap have been piled on you in this life, your true nature is love. And spirit knows that, and spirit sees that. Okay. But what there is, though, is a difference in levels of evolution, you could say. We are each at a different stage in our evolution. And that makes it sound like duality, but for a second, let me just point out, though, that evolution doesn't necessarily mean, it's not like a scale, A to B. It'd be like saying, you know, I use this metaphor before, but I kind of like this metaphor. Like if one person is like a grapevine and the other person is like an oak tree, which one is more evolved? Which one's better? Well, you can't really compare them. One might be able to bear sweet fruit. The other one might be strong in it having a thick trunk. They're just different. So I'm just pointing that out because what we really have is difference in evolution. And so then, what's the main thing that we're processing? And the simple word that I use is fear. Fear just means yet unevolvedness. It just means that a part of us has rejected reality. And then when we do that, when we have fear, then this crazy fast thing happens here on Earth, all over the place. We're living in a world that is currently quite rife with it, at least historically has been. And that is ego arises. And ego is just the portion of the self that's really trying to do its best to fix the problem because now there's this big missing thing. I don't feel connected to the whole anymore. I don't feel powerful. I don't feel loved. So we just grab on anything we can to try to get that power back or to try to get that love back or to try to prove to ourselves, look, I have value now because look, I got a 4.0 in college, or I have value because I have money, or I have power because look, I can harm the person next to me and be mean right now and my ego makes me feel better for 2 seconds. You know, our world... So I'm just saying we express through ego fear that we have. So to your question, all I'm saying is this fear that I came to process in this life, in a previous life, it overtook me and I became an egoic monster because I was so afraid. So ego and bad, the bad person, you could say, it just means they have fear. And that's okay. I'm not saying it's okay to cause damage. I just mean that it's okay to recognize, no, it's okay if you have fear. we can actually love and accept one another anyway. In fact, love is the answer to all that fear. And when we really process our fear, we grow in love. And then the ego doesn't have to be there anymore. It doesn't have to have an us versus them thinking anymore. It doesn't have to do that, because the love and peace and joy and freedom is our true nature. It just automatically rises up and shines as we process all the crap, as we process all the fear.
Now, this applies because some of the people you're talking about just sound like mean jerks, which is different than serial killers or dictators.
But I don't draw a big distinction.
Really? Okay.
Actually, yeah, because my fear is the same as, like, my fear is insane. Hitler's fear was insane. The only difference is a difference in scope or actualized effect. Now, I'm not saying that the actualized effect isn't important. Oh, it's important. We should not hurt each other. We should do our best to be compassionate and love each other. And there are different degrees of fear, and there are different degrees of power that fear wields. But fear is always insane. It's just the bottom line. It doesn't matter if it's a small fear, if it's large fear, fear is always insane. And where ego is operating, it's insane. It's going to cause damage or hurt others in some degree. It's just that some of those individuals reach points of power. And then we have methodically wielded ego through many of our societal institutions, actually, because we've institutionalized us versus them thinking. We've institutionalized certain predatory economic patterns. You know, like, we really are deep in this ego game. That's just where we've come from. It's just because we have so much fear, because the limitations are so extreme. So we don't have to worry about all that so much. It's just, if we can go into ourselves and find and process our own fear, that actually helps the whole world to move forward and heal.
Can't fear be good at times? Like, let's say there's a deadly pandemic and you're scared, so you decide to stay home and you save your life and vulnerable people's lives. I'm scared to drive 100 miles an hour on the highway, and that's probably a good thing.
So the way that I use fear is somewhat philosophical, in the sense that I'm using it in the context of that which is the only apparent opposite of love. There's no actual opposite of love, but it's the only apparent real thing that we're dealing with here, and that is yet unevolvedness or rejection. The examples that you listed can all be undertaken without fear. There can be, so you can be prudent and wise without fear. You can recognize and decide to not drive 100 miles an hour. And you don't need fear to be the thing that tells you not to do that. Now, you know, like one of the simple example is, in our society, we have a relatively crude justice system. It works, but it's not perfect, of course. And good people end up being hurt. So the question is, do you need, like, because someone might ask, well, why not just go out and murder somebody? If we don't have laws, then, you know, why wouldn't I just go do that? Well, do you need laws to prevent, do you need punishment to prevent you from murdering someone? If you do, we should have some laws. And we are at the point as a species where many people do need laws. we do need the structures, because we have fear. But if there was no fear, if there was no ego, we wouldn't even need that, you see, because love is our true nature. Now, I know that seems like a super far way away from where we are now, but I think it's important that we remind ourselves in that direction, because that loving nature of spirit is the truth of what we are.
That reminds me of an interesting quote. I feel so bad I don't remember who said it, because it's really great, but it was someone in response to a religious fundamentalist. And I'm not knocking religion anyway. I'm knocking a very fundamentalist version. But a religious fundamentalist had written, "Without a belief in God, what stops you from raping and killing all you want?" And the person responded, "I am raping and killing all I want. I don't want to rape or kill anyone. The amount I want to do that is zero, and the amount I've done that is zero." And I was like, that makes so much sense, because I can't say I don't want to murder in the sense, I don't want that on me, but if I had a chance to murder someone who was maybe like a serial killer and I could save a lot of lives, that would probably be the right thing to do. I don't know if I could I do it presented with that. I don't know. But in that case, I would probably say, if I knew this person was going to go murder like 20 children or just people, innocent people, it probably is the right thing to do. But, and I would probably be tortured with that, being the one presented with that choice.
Yeah, this is a complex ethical point, of course. but I'll just at least make this one comment. I don't want to try to speak to that in breadth. But the person who might go cause harm to others is a part of you. They're your brother or sister. They're one with the ocean, just as you are. And the people that they might go hurt are one, too, with the ocean. And so you can very lovingly acknowledge, and with great compassion, oh, this person is acting unconsciously. I need to intervene, even if that intervention means physical violence. That might be required. Now, here's the thing, though. The ego will get a hold of that idea real quick because it wants excuses to play out its own us versus them thinking, its own seeking of power. I'm simply saying that we can act the way that is best for love, even without that egoic fear. We can intervene against the person who might do something terrible, even with love in our hearts, even though it makes us sad to do so, even if it, you know, we know that they're our brother and sister, we can stand up and do the right thing. And we don't actually need to lose our peace. See, that's the thing. Anytime you feel like your peace is being lost, there's some association, some fear, some ego pattern that is being triggered.
Now, NDEers, near-death mm-hmm. experiencers, will often say they experience their near-death experience as realer than real.
Yes.
Has it been realer than real for you?
Yes.
When you...
Yes, 100%. So both out-of-body experiences I've had and the pre-birth experience were 1,000 times more real and lucid than this. I mean, I don't know if I can't put a number on it. 1,000 is not, can't even put a number on it. It's just a different, it's like going to an IMAX movie theater and then going back and watching black and white television. And somebody says, how do you know there's something outside of black and white television? Cause guess what? I saw it. It's so real. There, like I said, there is sensory experience on the other side that's so, so, so full and rich. Sights and sounds and feelings and colors that don't even exist on Earth. And my pre-birth experience is so deep and so personal and so multifaceted. It's not like an earthly memory. It's very like, oh, it's so holy and so close to me and so complete. I don't know how to describe it because it's not like one discrete thing. It's like connected to everything. And the realness of that is, it's far more real than even this.
Can I ask you what you mean by that? Like, do you have stronger physiological sensations? Do you feel more alive? I guess I've had very, very real dreams, very real, but they don't feel as real. I have yet to have any experience feel as real as here.
Yes. Yes to both questions. So we define reality. On Earth, we tend to define reality as sensory experience and thoughts and feelings. I saw that you went to this place where there was this object which had this shape and this color and blah, blah, you know, on and on. So we're very interested in that. And like I said, those do exist in higher systems and even in more rich and real ways. As an example, one time I was out of body and I was looking at the grass, like this reality. I don't know how to describe it or label it, but I was in this place that had this beautiful sky and this beautiful grass. And this grass was so green and so lush and so alive, the color itself was living. The color was alive and it was a part of me and I was a part of it, but I also was me. I was also individuated. And I remember staring at this grass and being like, oh my gosh, the green of this grass is so beautiful and so green and so rich. I feel like I could stare at it all day and I would be completely filled with bliss just from staring at the green of this grass. And so I started thinking, what makes this so green? As soon as I started kind of analyzing it, in this case, I actually returned to the human awareness because I started focusing into my human object set. But anyway, I'm just saying that sensory experience was off the charts real. The aliveness is off the charts real. This experience is the more dead state. You know, it's funny because we talk about when people die, they're dead. And then when we portray in our movies the other side, we tend to portray these gray, drab environments as if life on Earth is the real thing. And that, no. This is the more dead state right now. This is the much more limited, limiting state. This is the dream. But like in a fractal pattern, like all things arise here. In this dream, we might fall asleep at night and have other dreams that are less real. That's like a fractal down, a step down. Whereas when we awake from this physical life, we're in a higher fractal pattern up, and it's more real. like waking up from a dream. It's like when you wake up from a dream in the morning, you don't have to say to yourself, oh, am I in my bed? Is this real? You just know. Like, you just know this is the real world and the dream was just a dream. That's just normal. It's so normal. You get up and you go about and have your breakfast. It's no big deal. It's like that after we die too. It's like, oh, that was just a dream. And that's the more normal, the more real. And it's just obvious.
You described the other side, which after talking to you sounds so limited because it sounds like multiple other sides, just like calling, you know, whatever city you live in here, the city or the town.
Yeah.
Is there a risk that it's so vast we can't find some of our loved ones who've also crossed?
No. Okay, so the question arises out of the belief in distance and separation, whereas distance and separation aren't real. I know they appear very real. The one ocean of consciousness is one thing. It's always connected. It's always connected to every other part of the whole. So you are connected to your loved ones right now. Where? Not necessarily out in the virtual world, the physical, discrete world where things look like they're separate, but in the thing that's already one with everything else, and that is your aliveness itself, your consciousness itself, your beingness. Now, here on Earth, that beingness, that aliveness feels subtle when we first start going towards it. It feels like the gross external world is super real. The internal world is very subtle. Okay, but if you go deep enough towards that aliveness itself, I don't want to stimulate the ego too much because this can be a stimulating idea, but there is a point when there's this incredible, blissful inversion that can happen where it's like kind of being turned inside out and the wholeness of your being can be known and felt as everywhere and connected to all things. And in that everywhereness is everyone else too. So the only thing that you ever need to do to connect with someone who's passed is an intention, thought. If you have a pure, see, intention is the primary power that we wield as consciousness, not actually physical action, not actually thought. Those things are subsequent to intent. Intent is the real power. It's the movement of consciousness. When you intend to reach out and connect to someone you love, that's automatically a bridge with them. The guide Silver Birch, I heard him once communicate that from their perspective on the other side, this is just a metaphor, but if someone on Earth has a loving thought or a loving intention, they perceive it like a chime on the wind that they can then follow back to us. And that's beautiful. You know. So then I was just, I just comment though that practically speaking, there is this huge vibrational distance between the Earth realm and that side. What I mean is there's like a grand canyon of vibrational difference. So if we want to actually meet and interact with them, it's often impractical because we are deeply veiled and we're so focused into these low vibration thoughts and patterns. If we let go of all that and kind of like let ourselves rise up in vibration, then they can sometimes come down and we can kind of meet in the middle. Maybe we have a dream together or a, you know, a nudge of some kind. Anyway, just a comment about that.
Do we even live a limited amount of material lives? Do you ever hit a point where you're just like, I am beyond a material dimension. I will never be a material level again.
Yes. Yeah. So the material world is discrete and limited by nature. Like there's only so many stars. There's only so many houses. There's only so much space. There's only so much time. That's just the very nature of our physical universe. So to that effect, similarly then, yes, I mean, metaphorically, you could say like the soul, like you're only going to go to college so many days. You don't go to class forever. You might go a few thousand times, you know, but eventually it's just not going to be useful or beneficial or meaningful to pursue that anymore. So it's similar with a physical incarnation cycle. You know, you may have many experiences, but eventually there's not value in the continuation of it. So you're not going to continue. In fact, the physical is such an alien state. It's like, you know, it's quite a cost to come here because now we have to actually really experience these difficult themes that can be very rigorous and potentially challenging. So, you know, would we want to do that forever? No, no, not really.
When someone has gotten to this really high state, is there a limitless level of high state or do you, that you then just go and try to start accomplishing other things and continuing to grow to higher levels.
Yeah, the simplest answer I feel is that evolution never stops. We ever refine towards greater and greater levels of being. So there isn't an end. The linearity of it is a creation itself. There's no linear end. You could say that love and joy have no limit. So because they have no limit, evolution, we participate in evolution without end, without limit. And that's a beautiful thing, not a curse. You know, some people think, oh, I don't want to do this forever. No, that's because anytime we think that, it's because we are incorrectly believing that existence sucks. Like, we're believing that association with form is negative, so life must be negative, and I don't want to do that forever. In fact, just a quick comment, when we notice that we're doing that, it means there's something in ourselves that we haven't yet integrated yet. There's some opportunity for expansion that we haven't quite allowed yet. And yes, I know that when we look at this rich world with all of its difficulties, and it's easy for the mighty ego to rise up in righteousness and say, no way, I reject this. There's no way I'm going to be okay with this. But the thing is, love is not about rejection. It's about acceptance and embracing and compassion and full feeling and full being. When we can really do that here, then that is like, I'm using this word very loosely, but that is like graduation. When we fully come to accept all of the physical, all the feelings, all the limitations, all the responsibility, all the love, then it's okay. See, but then it's ironic because then it's okay if you come back, but now you don't need to anymore.
So people like that have come back here. Who would they be on our planet?
Yeah, I mean, I'd only be surmising, but I feel like Jesus would be a great example. Perhaps the Buddha. There are many saints throughout time. You know, like I said, I'm reading Autobiography of a Yogi right now with my wife, and there are a number of amazing individuals who are very spiritually aware listed in that book. It's not particular to a specific religion or country or time period. It's that, see, this is the thing. Okay, this is really important. Really evolved, loving beings recognize the value and power of service. Love wants to serve. It wants to give. So beings who are very loving and evolvedness are synonymous. So very evolved beings want to come back and serve. I'm reminded of this one book. I forget what it was. I think it was a Bob Monroe book where he was interacting with a guide who was very evolved, and he asked her to show him like where she resided, where she was, and he saw this really downtrodden slum, and it was this very difficult, you know, poor place with lots of difficulty. And he said, "Why? What? You're so loving and wise. Why would you be there?" And she said, "This is where I am needed." You see, that's the nature of love, is to come back for those who yet have fear, to help others grow in love and to heal and to return to the formlessness that we are, to basically to work through and integrate all this so that we can step past and realize the form never had what we're seeking. The love and the joy of being, it already preceded all the form. It already transcended the form. So we could say we come back for those who might be lost in the illusion of form still to help until we return to that love and that freedom of our being, rather than to be in quote unquote lost or trapped or enslaved within association to form. We're not actually ever lost or trapped or enslaved, never. I'm just saying we experientially become trapped because of our association with thought and with the form and with the stimulatingness of all the sense data of the earth and all the rest.
After we've done all the physical, either we come, there's still always more to do. So sometimes we'll come back here and be the higher level. Sometimes we'll be doing stuff in dimensions you or I, or at least I, can't understand.
You do understand deep down. I'm not special. It's we all know, even though this might not intellectually make a lot of sense, and I encourage the big question mark, underneath your being knows and intuits the freedom that I'm referring to.
Hi, can I ask all of you listening a favor? Would you mind rating and reviewing my book, WTF Just Happened? A Sciencey Skeptic explores grief, healing, and evidence of an afterlife on Amazon. Authors depend so much on ratings. They are crucial to the algorithm and Amazon making sure this book is seen. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. Thank you. Hi, I'm interrupting the podcast episode for this week's listener question. So this question of the week really made me think, and heads up, my answer is very speculative. Heather came across a study, which I'll include in the show notes. So essentially, when the claustrum of the brain of an epileptic patient was stimulated with an electrode, the patient lost awareness. She could not sense or process information, speak, or respond to questions. She continued to breathe, blink, have all the regular healthy signs of life. When the electrode was stimulated again, she returned to normal consciousness. When she woke up, she had no awareness or memory of this time. And apparently, this experiment was repeated. And so now here's Heather's question. If we make the assumption that it's possible to turn consciousness on and off by stimulating the claustrum, how can consciousness possibly live outside of the brain? I love this question, and I love learning about this study. So here's my answer. And so note, this is just my opinion and hopefully educated guess. No one really knows the answer. But I compare it with going under anesthesia. So I think for almost all of us, we don't have any memories after we come out of anesthesia. Also, I've always wondered as well, why do aspects of a personality change if parts of the brain are damaged? Why do only some people have near-death experiences and then others remember nothing and say nothing happened? I think these questions are all essentially asking or exploring the same thing. I think if we end up answering one of them, it'll answer all of them. My best guess is we don't really know where non-local consciousness memories are stored. We don't know what the mechanism is that holds them. Also, the concept of consciousness. If you have a question you want me to answer, send it to hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put question of the week in the subject. I know I usually say first names, but if you want to be completely anonymous, let me know. And feel free to reach out anyway, even if you don't have a question. I can't wait to hear your questions and hear from you. Where can our listeners find you, follow you, stay up to date?
Yeah. So I just have a website, awalkinthephysical.com. I do post talks there, and my email address is awalkinthephysical@gmail.com. I can't respond to everybody. Sometimes I get just too many emails to respond to. Eventually, I may have a YouTube channel or maybe a some other form of social media. I haven't decided yet. I feel like eventually that's naturally going to unfold. But for now, yeah, please visit my website. The book is available to be read online for free there at the third link down, or it's available on Amazon or Audible as an audiobook.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. It is wonderful to see you here in the physical, even though I have no idea how I know you. It's wonderful to meet here in this way. And thank you for the service you're providing. I love this context because, like, I'm a left brain person too. This stuff really is real. It's excellent to approach this in a way that is, you know, open to skepticism. I know this stuff sounds out there. Go investigate. You know, just be a scientist. Go investigate your own consciousness. Find out what you really are underneath thinking. And it's amazing what's there.
I agree. I certainly was astounded when I went and did this. Was not expecting to end up where I am. Even in my wildest dreams could I have envisioned. What I found are that I'd be doing this. Why? Exactly. I say that all the time.
I'm sure you do.
To get more information on what the fuck just happened, go to WTFJustHappened.net. There, you can order my book, WTF Just Happened, A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife. You can learn all about how I came to conclude that there most likely is an afterlife, but you can also learn about the early stages of my grief and the amazing, fascinating people I met along the way. You can read about how much I harassed the mediums and scientists trying to get evidence to see if the mediums were cheating and see if what everyone was saying actually was true. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to stay updated on any new developments and any interesting new what the fuck updates. So if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It makes such a difference, especially for a new podcast like this one. And if any of you have had a crazy what the fuck yourself, have any questions, feedback, or just want to say hey, reach out on either Instagram at WTF_just_happened_ or email me at hello@WTFjustHappened.net. I love hearing from all of you. It makes my day hearing your stories and questions and feedback and all of it. And remember, you don't have to draw any final conclusions as you wonder, what the fuck just happened?